Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
From the Financial Times in London, this is Hard Currency. I'm Katie Martin and I'm joined by Johan Murray, who's head of investment at Hermes Investment Management. Johan, thanks for coming in.
You're very welcome.
So let's start with some of the big topics of the week. I feel slightly overwhelmed with big topics of the week, but let's start close to home, I guess. Sterling had a big jump yesterday, and the proximate reason, I guess, were these headlines suggesting that we might be close to a Brexit deal. Actually, it's not overly clear that anything new has happened, but the market is looking a bit twitchy. What's going on?
It seems almost as though the market is sort of willing to clutch at straws here to get a bit of action back into sterling. I think everybody's been so downbeat in many ways that the slightest hint of a potential positive surprise is jumped upon. But I suppose when we look at the move in the bigger context, we've got a couple of cents movement. It doesn't really, with the benefit of hindsight as we now look back, doesn't feel like a huge leap. And I think still you're going to see a lot of people are going to be on the short side of the book against sterling.
Yeah, as you say, we've only got up to about $1.30. But I think it's so long since I've seen a rally in sterling that maybe that's what made it stand out, right?
Yeah, it's a bit like volatility. It's lovely to see a rally come back. We haven't seen much volatility for ages either. I don't see how the remarks, Barnier's remarks yesterday, greatly changed the probability of the different outcomes.
Because he was saying he's willing to do a deal effectively, but was also saying, this is a club. We have rules. We can't bend the rules.
Absolutely. And we all know that realistically, the EU can't possibly bend the rules because it opens them to so many other worse scenarios that they can't possibly contemplate. So positive language without perhaps a great deal of meaning behind it.
As you say, it's because the market has been so downbeat recently. Currency traders are a miserable bunch, right? I guess they've been pretty beaten up over the past couple of years. But so leverage funds have been running extremely short of sterling, right? So I guess that just leaves us vulnerable to quote unquote good news is going to have a bigger impact than bad news.
Yeah, I think that's right. If you look at the sort of overall positioning of the market, my suspicion is that institutions have been short sterling for some time now. That position hasn't really altered to any great extent. Instead, it's the marginal traders, the leverage players, as you said, who really have been dictating the direction of the movement, or perhaps, you know, if we're nice, responding to current political events, let's say.
Yes, we are very much responding to political events. And from that point of view, sterling is a bit like an emerging market currency these days. But anyway, when you look at the big picture, it's just such a binary outcome, right? We either get an okay Brexit or we get a scorched earth Brexit. How do leverage funds or anybody else deal with that? Do you just have to sit and wait until you know what flavour you're going to get?
I think they do, because we all know that there are various fudges in there or baked in already, all of which could fall apart at any moment. So right up until the last minute, I don't think it's going to be exactly clear what flavour we're going to get. I still think some form of hard Brexit deal is the most likely outcome. And no deal is really quite a small probability, but it's a high-impact event if it happens. It's a big tail risk, let's be honest.
High-impact event, that's market parlance for bit of a disaster. Yeah. Speaking of disasters, we have some real shake-ups going on in emerging markets at the moment. Now, they're quite localised. We have Turkey doing its thing, which it's been doing all summer. The currency has resumed its decline this week. We have Argentina, which a few minutes before you arrived in the building raised interest rates to 60% after the currency fell out of bed again for the second day in a row. It obviously wants to accelerate these payments from the IMF. Are these discrete issues? Are these, you know, or is this a systemic EM wobble that we're starting to see the beginning of?
I'm going to go with the former. And the reason being that if this had happened 10 years ago, any one of these discrete local issues, I think, could easily have escalated around, right round the emerging market universe, and then with the potential spillover to developed markets as well. I think the financial markets, in some sense, have come a long way, such that these localized events are really kept as discrete happenings, and they don't have this contagion effect. So I'm almost at the point of saying capital markets have grown up, and I'm really not sure I feel comfortable about that.
So you think that, broadly speaking, global growth, despite all the slings and arrows that are thrown at it by politicians all around the world, is kind of motoring along?
No, that would be too simple. I think we're seeing divergent global growth, and that's probably unsustainable for a any long period of time. We've got the US still seeming to sort of power along, whereas Europe, Asia, the rest of the world is definitely the growth is dropping off. Let's assume that they do converge at some future point. The only question is, which direction is it? Is the rest of the world going to pick up and catch back up with the States, or is the States, in fact, going to be pulled down into the mire? Given everything else that's going on, my suspicion is it's probably the latter.
And in amongst it all, the Fed is just gently pushing up rates one step at a time. We don't seem to be seeing the sort of taper tantrum, you know, experience that we've had in the past. Do you think the market's just taking this in its stride to a greater extent than it has done before?
I think we've got complacency, if I'm brutally honest. We're looking at short VIX net positioning, which is almost back to where it was in February when we had our major wobble. That tells me that not a lot of lessons have been learned, even in a six-month period. I didn't realise that short memory really was that short, but there we go. I'm sitting here watching a nominal yield curve that's flat and very close to inversion. A couple more rate rises this year without the 10-year moving anywhere, and we are inverted. We know that the corporate yield curve is effectively already inverted. The real yield curve, if you take off break-evens out the nominal, is inverted. And the global yield curve is also already inverted.
Red lights that
these are massive red lights that are historically have been excellent recession forecasters.
Historically, does it work like that anymore? That's the big question, right? But I know this is something you've written about recently, that there was this big kind of volatility shock not so long ago. There does seem to be quite a long list of things that could cause this to happen again.
Yes, absolutely. There is, I think amongst the sell side banks, they have a magic checklist of about 15 things that they require to happen simultaneously for us to be absolutely guaranteed an event. But of course, as you say, no event is ever the same as a historical one. It'll be new things that we don't expect that will catch us unawares this time. I just think that the odds are that we are looking at some liveliness, let's call it, in the next 12 to 18 months.
Diplomatically put. So for an investment manager, I guess your only tactic is to be diversified and be nimble and just to watch the screens.
Very much so. I think certainly be diversified, but don't assume that any sort of relationships that you believe have held for the recent past will hold going forward. They can change very quickly. Stay nimble and flexible in your asset allocation. And ideally, if you're a long-term investor, any kind of disruption will throw opportunities up. Mm. And so position yourself to take advantage of those too.
Yeah, hard to say where they're going to come from, right?
Absolutely. And I think, as you said, being nimble will allow you to, flexibly take advantage of those as they appear.
Yeah, these are testing times. We need it all to grow like some more eyes so that we can watch several screens at once. And
indeed. Or perhaps just switch off all the screens altogether and stop watching them. I think that might actually be better.
Well, switch off all your screens apart from your FT.com screen.
Of course.
So to keep on top of everything that's going on in markets, do keep an eye on FT.com/markets. Johan, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.